So I was really, my name is Tom Gianni, came with the Washington State Department of Health, and I lead the Infectious Disease Assessment Unit, and we do HIV, chronic hepatitis, STD, TB surveillance, as well as the data, produced data for the prevention programs for those different areas. And I am going to talk today about durable HIV viral load suppression among people in care in Washington State from the years 2009 through 2013. I'll use the medical monitoring project data to do that. Before I do, however, I would like to say I was really impressed with Val's presentation on Monday, and that break the opening plenary. And so I had the good fortune of talking with her just very briefly on the way out and told her I had this presentation. She said, start with the moral of the story. So she's a bright woman, and I'm going to start with the moral of the story. There's relatively good viral load suppression in Washington State, but really it's not evenly spread out among all the different subgroups. And so different groups of people really don't enjoy that high level of viral load suppression, including people who are under the federal poverty level, people who inject drugs, who smoke or drink heavily, people who are recently homeless or incarcerated, young compared to old, people who are recently infected, blacks, and are all groups who are more likely to not be suppressed than others who do not share those traits. So my goals for today are to give you a brief overview of the Medical Monitoring Project, or I'll call it MMP, give you a brief description of HIV in Washington. Claire's done a little bit of that, and I'll just show our care cascade as well. And then talk about factors associated with viral suppression over a 12-month period, which I'll call durable viral suppression. And just for comparison purposes, I'll also show most recently suppressed, because when you talk about viral suppression, it's when. Is it the most recent? Is it forever? Is it over the last year? And fortunately, in the MMP, we ask what happened over the prior year. We also look in the medical records regarding what happened over the prior year, so we can compare those. And then also, influenced by Val, I'd like to get you to help me tell the end of the story. And specifically, as you are listening to my presentation this afternoon, think about what sorts of groups or organizations to share. I can share the data with. I think I'm somewhat guilty of the same haircut philosophy that she shared on Monday in terms of kind of talking to the same people. What sorts of data products might we produce that can reach people that we typically don't reach? What sorts of additional analyses could we do? It's a lot to cover, but I think if we can do it faster than you can get your check at Fat Ptarmigan, we'll be okay. So MMP is just a great surveillance project. It's a national stratified, pretty complex survey and has three stages. So the first stage is sampling at the state or large city level. And then once those are chosen, we select our HIV care facilities, so we don't choose emergency departments or urgent care. And then we ask those HIV care facilities to give us a list, anonymized list of their individual patients who received care from January through April of a calendar year, and then those individuals are sampled for the project. And then there is a large amount of clinical and behavioral data that we collect over the course of the project. It's on an annual cycle. We have a population definition period, which I just mentioned, so people who are in care from January through April. And our surveillance period is typically 12 months before the patient interview, although some things, data are collected for longer than that 12-month period. And our two primary methods of collecting data are a lengthy and in-depth interview with the patient, taking from anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour and a half. And then there's a medical record abstraction where for those people who are interviewed, we obtain their medical records either electronically or through paper and obtain lots of data off of those records. And then there's some supplement to those data from the actual EHARS or registry, HIV registry data. So you can see here there's a long list of areas in which we collect information: demographics, access to care, HIV treatment and adherence, a lot about sexual behavior, drug and alcohol use, various prevention activities such as STD screening, mental health, other health conditions and preventive therapy, and for women, gynecological and reproductive history. So one of the real benefits of the Medical Monitoring Project is that CDC can then weight the data after we provide them to the CDC and then give us population estimates for the people in our sampled area. For us, it happens to be our state. For some sites, it's the large city. One of the downsides, however, is that it takes about 2 years for CDC to get those data back to us, which is a long time. And fortunately, they're working to actually shorten that. So their goal is to get us our weighted data back within a year. For the data that I'm going to show today, our sample size over the five-year period was 1,081 individuals who both had the interview and medical record abstraction. And our population estimate is 6,329 individuals in care. So not all states have HIV viral load reporting, so the CDC is using MMP data for some of their viral load information to support the National HIV AIDS Strategy, because they can roll up all the 23 different sites around the country and provide some national estimates. It's a really valuable source of data for local, state, and federal HIV prevention and care planning, because it provides some really in-depth information on health outcomes, how patients interact with the healthcare system, whether they experience barriers to care, what sort of behaviors they have that affect their health outcomes, and also behaviors that affect transmission. So today I'm going to talk about all viral loads suppressed over the prior year or the prior 12 months before the interview. And that's defined as less than or equal to 200 copies per milliliter. For comparison purposes, I'm also going to show the most recent viral load suppressed. And I will show descriptive statistics and odds ratios, which the weights I obtained from the CDC, and I use SAS to calculate the odds ratios. All of them unadjusted. Claire covered that. So here's a, in some sense, it's a conservative estimate of our care continuum. In others, it might be a more generous estimate, and I'll get into that a little bit. But at the end of 2015, we had about 14,500 individuals living with HIV. That's including those not yet diagnosed. About 90% of them actually were diagnosed. 83% linked to care within 90 days. Approximately 10,700 individuals engaged in any care, and a little over 9,000 individuals with a suppressed viral load, or 63%. If you look at just the among the individuals diagnosed, that's HIV viral load suppression was at about 70%. The reason why this is a conservative estimate is because it includes everyone who was diagnosed in Washington, whether or not they're still there. And we, if we were to take away people who we don't have any information about them over the last five-year period, which is probably a reasonable thing to do, the viral load suppression goes up to about 77%. The reason why it's a little bit generous, though, is because if you look at and you'll see in the following slides, this is taking the most recent viral load, not viral load over the prior 12 months. And so it's a little bit of a generous estimate there. I've mentioned this already, although if you think about it, if you're looking at the most recent viral load suppressed, that's obviously within the group of all viral loads suppressed over the prior year. So they're not too independent. groups, and I'm not going to be comparing those two groups statistically, but I will show them visually in the graphs. So this, what I want to show here is that kind of consistently year after year, we're getting about 30% individuals not suppressed. And so in these slides coming up, I had to decide, should I show the good news or the bad news? And so I'm going to focus on individuals who are not suppressed rather than who are suppressed, because I think those are the groups of people who really we want to focus on in terms of prevention. And so I'll take a second here to orient you to this slide, so because a lot of them will be very similar. The red bars are looking at all of those viral loads over the prior 12 months, and the blue bars will be looking at individuals with the most recent viral load. And so, for example, here in the 18 to 29-year-olds, oh, and the N at the bottom of each sets of bars will be the population estimate for that group using the CDC weighted data. So for here, for example, about 55% of the 18 to 29-year-olds are not suppressed, looking at all of their viral loads over the prior 12 months, whereas if you looked at just their most recent viral loads, that goes down to just 20%. And the population estimate for that group is 371. And in terms of the odds ratios, the odds of 18 to 29-year-olds not being suppressed are 4.2 times that of individuals 50 and over. So here, breaking up a recency of HIV diagnosis into three different categories: less than 5 years, 5 to 9 years since diagnosis, and 10 or more years, you can see that approximately 45% of the individuals diagnosed less than 5 years ago are not suppressed. And that's overall about 18% of the population of people living with HIV and in care. And the odds ratio is 2.2 times that of individuals diagnosed 10 or more years ago. Looking at race ethnicity, about 13% of our population, Black, non-Hispanic, 40% of them are not suppressed over the prior 12 months, and the odds ratio of 1.6. Income is another factor that's associated with lack of viral suppression, and about 30% of the people in care are under the federal poverty level, and among that group, approximately 40% of the individuals do not have viral suppression over the prior year, with an odds ratio of approximately 2.1. These data surprised me a little bit. I didn't realize there was so much homelessness in our population. So about 10% of the people in care were homeless over the prior 12 months, and that held true pretty much in each year of the 5-year period. And among that group, almost 55% are not suppressed over the prior 12 months, and with an odds ratio of close to 3. About 5% of the population, people living in care, had been incarcerated over the prior 12 months. And among this group, again, close to 55% of those individuals were not virally suppressed, with an odds ratio of 3 compared to those who were not incarcerated over the prior 12 months. We have about 15% of our people in care are co-infected with hepatitis C, and among this group, close to 40% of that group was not suppressed over the prior 12 months, and the odds ratio is about 1.5 times compared to those individuals who had HIV only. So people who go to get HIV care have better health outcomes, and this slide demonstrates that in the sense that about 20% of the population had 0 or 1 HIV care-related visit in the prior 12 months, And among that group, 45% did not achieve viral suppression, and an odds ratio a little over 2. Thanks, Jerry. So we ask if people in care have any sort of support service needs, such as case management, peer support, financial assistance, interpreter services, and a variety of others. And so if an unmet need is if an individual had need for any one of those services but was unable to receive it, and among people at any unmet need, so one or more, 35% were not virally suppressed, compared to 25% of those who had no unmet need. Insurance coverage makes a difference. So people who had lapsed insurance during the prior 12 months or had no insurance coverage, 55% among those who had lapsed insurance and almost 45% among those who had no insurance coverage lacked viral suppression over the prior year. And this is somewhat intuitive. People who visited the ER for HIV-related reasons, if they had 5 or more ER visits over the prior 24 months, about 70% of them lacked viral suppression, and almost 50% of those who visited the ER for HIV-related reasons over the prior 2 years, 50% were not suppressed. So injection drug use has a strong influence also on viral suppression. Close to almost 60% of individuals who used injection drugs over the prior 12 months lacked viral suppression, compared to 30% who did not. And kind of overall prevalence of that was close to 8% of the population. So I have to apologize because I realized I had these odds ratios and percents are exactly the same for both unprotected anal intercourse and smoking. I can assure you, though, that the associations were significant, but I don't, I'm not confident in these odds ratios, but both of those, about 35% of the population engaged in unprotected anal intercourse over the prior 12 months, and 40% of the population were identified themselves as current smokers. And lastly, another risk factor, heavy drinking. So about 5% of the population indicated that they were heavy drinkers in the last 30 days, and about half of them did not have viral suppression over the prior 12 months. This is just merely a summary of those associations ranked by the largest odds ratios. So several demographic, socioeconomic, care-related, and risk factors are associated with the odds of not being virally suppressed over a 12-month period. These include age, race, ethnicity, homelessness, incarceration, income, recency of HIV diagnosis, insurance status, number of care visits, injection drug use, heavy drinking and smoking. Prevention programs, care providers, case managers can use these factors to target individuals when they're working with them in terms of who might not be virally suppressed and who might need some more attention. There are some limitations to this study, so this was relatively straightforward univariate analysis, and the next step is to look at some interactions, multivariate analyses to see what sort of effect modifiers, mediators, and confounders might be involved. The data are a little bit old, but not too much. It's a relatively stable population in Washington, so we don't see a lot of fluctuation from year to year, so that might not be too large of a limitation. And one large limitation, though, is by nature of this project, these are individuals in care and not the HIV population as a whole. And MMP changed their sampling strategy in 2015, so we're now sampling directly out of the HIV/AIDS registry rather than among just those people who are in care. So maybe we'll start to get a little bit more information about people, in fact, as a whole, rather than just individuals in care. So I'd like to acknowledge the following individuals who absolutely this project would not be possible without: our community and provider advisors, the staff at King County, as well as the staff at Washington State Department of Health. Thank you.
So Tom has his own question.
Yeah, so how can I make this better? I know it's not perfect, so there must be something. Thank you.
Well, can I?
Oh, maybe Melissa has something. I don't know.
I think we should all move to Washington, because if it's this bad in Washington, like, you guys are doing such great things and you have so much support and funding, it's just terrifying for the rest of us. But I mean, we've been doing Linkage to Care here in Alaska for 4 years, and Jess and I were, you know, bouncing around as you were presenting, thinking, you know, it's really obvious to me with such a small data set and everything I know, like, my data is super clean and we could eat dinner off it right now because of the Linkage to Care project. And it's really obvious that our out-of-care population is feeding our incident cases. It is a self-fulfilling prophecy. And for as long as we continue to engage and case manage the highest functioning people, the lowest functioning people will continue to infect people like them. And 15 years from now, it's going to be mostly homeless, drinking, uninsured, disengaged people. And so it's like your presentation was like this light bulb where I was like, you know, not only are these my out of care, but their partners are my new cases. More and more. I've been here 10 years, but I've been doing this 17 years. And it used to be employed, Caucasian, gay men in the mid-90s. That's who we interviewed. And now it's homeless people who have no hope of adhering to ARV, or uninsured people with limited resources, distrust of systems. And so, I mean, whatever the answer is, we need to do it and make sure that we're throwing the biggest effort at what feels like a small number of people. Because I think that really that's becoming our new incident HIV.
That's definitely the truth.
Right out from under us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so jails, ERs, all the, you know, the things you measured are the places where we would engage those people and the systems that we need to draw into our fold to make active referrals for those ER, chronic ER people that they see, and referring people out of corrections actively for care. Like, there's places to do it, you know.
But thinking of that health impact period, it's how do you get really low in that period, the pyramid, I mean, and not so much just the very top.
Right, we're reacting right now
yeah.
to it,
yeah.
for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's super interesting, and I'm glad that you presented that, because those of us that don't have MMP, we don't get all that detail.
It's incredible. So, that's just a part of it.
Yeah.
There's so much, you know.
Right, thank you, yeah. Mm-hmm.